on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, I know some of you are going to say, look, I tried to get and call you in the first hour. I wanted to talk about the afterlife. I wanted to talk about an experience I had. Sorry, I do apologise. We had so many calls on the board and such good talent in the studio. I had to mix it all up. And you can come back and join us a little later on in the chat room with Frank Sheehan, who will join us later on in the evening. Right now, though, we're going to introduce you to somebody who's got a great care both for this life and the next. Faye Tevi, a Tongan who is very much a cultural ambassador for his country, both in the political arena and the spiritual arena. Somebody who has had great presence within the Council of Churches in the Pacific and as somebody with a care for political action in his own country. He's a Tongan who, in the face of climate change and economic uncertainty, facing the people of the Pacific, has come to Australia recently with the Uniting Church to lobby members of the federal government and talk about the Pacific Initiative. And, of course, out of that flow a number of things, such as labour practices and the whether or not we can have Pacific Islanders coming here for extended periods to help with our labour force, but also other issues such as climate change, what's going to happen when the sea levels rise in countries of the Pacific, also the political arena, what's happening in Fiji and other countries. Faye Tevi, our guest in this hour. And we're going to begin our journey into the Pacific with Faye Tevi with some music from Tonga.
Come on.
Music of the Pacific, a region fabled as a paradise of peace, harmony and balmy tranquility. These days, the brochure images are shadowed by stories of political conflict and climate change. Historically, Christianity has had a profound impact on the Pacific, but in recent years, it too has become caught up in both the political and environmental stresses that affect the region. Just a couple of weeks ago, the Australian government announced changes to refugee policy. For our Pacific neighbours, the stark reality is Australia as perhaps the lifeboat of last resort as sea level rises threaten the viability of island communities across the Pacific. Faye Tevey is General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches. He's in Australia to discuss these issues and others. Faye Tevey, welcome to Sunday Night.
Thank you. Thank you.
Faye, as someone representing a religious community, much of your life seems to be spent on decidedly secular causes, such as climate change.
Yes. I guess the whole challenge here is to try and ensure that the church does not remain a Sunday affair, but that the church becomes a Sunday-to-Sunday affair, and that we are involved in the lives of people in our communities and in our countries.
You've been in Australia talking to churches and other bodies about the critical importance of sea level rise. In Australia, the problem is not enough water. In the Pacific, the problem is potentially too much water.
Yes, too much water and not enough land to stand on. Yes, the issue of climate change is indeed a big issue in the Pacific. What we are particularly concerned about is the eventuality of populations having to be resettled in other countries and other islands as a result of sea level rise. But there again, even before sea level will rise and islands will go underwater, there is the threat of the salination of the water tables that will render countries and island countries uninhabitable.
Yes, again, there's some similarities with what's happening at the Lower Murray in Australia, where the threat to the Lower Murray is salt water coming in and destroying completely.
Absolutely, and as you know, when if there's no fresh water, it becomes difficult for human beings to settle on that island.
Some countries are already experiencing this. This isn't a future science fiction scenario.
No.
Tuvalu and other places
absolutely.
Are already experiencing.
Right now, we're already experiencing salination of the water tables, and resultant effects like changing diet, like increase in the vector and waterborne diseases, and other effects that we see today.
New Zealand as a country has a very close connection with the Pacific. It's seen as part of that Pacific community and has already recognised the extent to which, as part of that, as a responsible citizen in the Pacific, refugee policy as the island of hope is critical. To what extent are discussions in Australia going ahead with the same sort of confidence?
I think Australia still has a bit of way to go with regards to climate change. We are thankful to the Australian government for having ratified the Kyoto Protocol. Albeit 10, 11, 12 years late. But we still are thankful for that. The issue of refugees or the issue of resettlement populations...
Of climate refugees
really has to do with, perhaps, one, the goodwill of the country, but also has to do with or has to take into consideration the cultures and the traditions of these islanders that are being threatened by climate change. From the Pacific Church's perspective, the issue here and the challenge that we have in front of us is how do we address the issue of climate change resulting in climate refugees? How do we address it whilst maintaining our tradition and our cultures and our identity? And so the dialogue that's going to be opened next year will address this issue. And the hope is that we will try and find a solution from within the Pacific Island countries. I would not want to be using Pacific solution because that has other connotations here in Australia. But to enable and empower the Pacific churches to find a solution from within the Pacific region for other Pacific Island countries.
We've talked about climate change. Let's talk about one other issue. Recently, the Doha round of trade negotiations has collapsed worldwide. Australia and New Zealand have a responsibility with the Pacific economic discussions go on there. Does this become part of your brief as well?
Yes, it does, because we are, as the church, we are responsible for any issue that addresses or affects the people of the Pacific. And so if in trade discussions, these trade agreements will affect the lives of our people now and in the future, I think it's important as the church that we have a say in this issue. Why is it important? It is important because we do not want agreements that will further exacerbate the vulnerabilities and the marginalization of poor and vulnerable communities in our Pacific Island countries. We do not want agreements that will add to the imbalance that we have of economic injustice that we have in our Pacific Island countries. We would like to have an agreement that is a win-win situation that will develop our economic sectors, that will add and integrate development into its agreement, that will promote better relationships between Australia, New Zealand, and the Pacific Island countries. These are the things that we bring to the fore. And we as churches are mindful of negotiations on PESA and PESA Plus because we have had a very bad experience with the economic partnership agreements and negotiations that were held with the European Union.
Yes, and of course those issues spill over into the intercommunal issues, like sugar being identified with the Indian and those
very much
sorts
so.
Of things.
Very so much so.
These things are very much intertwined.
Very much integrated. And we cannot today, as the church, sit back and not be involved in these very important discussions. Mm. One of the main reasons why I'm here in Australia is to push the point with the Australian government and our partners in Australia, partner churches in Australia, that in order to have a good agreement on the table with regards to the Pacific Islands or Pacific Agreement on close economic relations with Australia, we need to have social impact assessments done on the various sectors, number one. Number two, we need to have informed civil society participation in every step of the formulation of national positions on this particular agreement. And we need to partner up with our churches and our partner organizations here in Australia or civil society organizations here in Australia to address the issue and to ensure that the outcome is an outcome that we can live with for the next 25 years.
We've got an Australian government, the Rudd government, which wants to see itself as a good neighbour. Mm. To what extent do you think the message of the churches is getting through to the government, or does there still need to be a bit of pounding on the door?
Yes, I think this is where we will challenge our partner churches and our partner organisations here in Australia, be it the United Church of Australia or the National Councils of Churches in Australia, to take up the issue of climate change and to take it up seriously and to really look at the Pacific region as a region of concern and a priority region for the churches here in Australia. There are lots of contacts, there are lots of relationships, both individual, community, and organizational relationships that we have between Australia and New Zealand, and New Zealand and the Pacific. And so the challenge for us is to place climate change right in the middle of it and to see how we as churches, both from the Pacific and from Australia, can work together to address this particular issue.
There's a long history and a depth of Christian commitment in the Pacific. That is, the Christian churches are seen as a significant player in the politics of the Pacific in a way which they perhaps haven't been in Australia and New Zealand for a generation or more.
Right.
Does Does your position and the position of people like yourself with a group like the Pacific Conference of Churches carry a fair amount of weight within the Pacific community? That is, you're able to actually talk to governments about policy and how they develop policy, and it's taken seriously.
We are fortunate enough in the Pacific region, and particularly in the Pacific Conference of Churches, to have the majority of Pacific Island government leaders sitting in the pews. And therefore, it is an opportunity for us to address the issues of concern, be it HIV/AIDS, climate change, or good governance, or even human rights issues. And the challenge is there for the churches to do that. Of course, there are churches in the range and continuum of positions that some are liberal in terms of really advocating on the issues. Some of our churches may be in line with the establishment and therefore restricted in their freedom or flexibility to address these types of issues. So we have the whole range with us.
Yes, it's a matter of keeping the churches inside the tent as much as it is being able to speak to government, isn't it?
Yes. And it's also what really is challenging for us as churches is that we try to bring in the position of the church into these issues. And of course, some of our governments would say, you know, the churches do not have the responsibility or the right to sit in and discuss issues of concern to them. Our response to that is that if you're talking about the issue of climate change, we as the churches have a duty and responsibility to be good stewards of God's creation. And in being good stewards or being guardians of God's creation, we have that responsibility to protect and to ensure that any action does not go towards the detriment of the environment.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia and across the world on the World Wide Web and through Radio Australia. Our guest is Faye Tevi, General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches. Faye Tevi in Australia to talk to other churches and to hopefully lobby on issues such as climate change. Faye, let's have a piece of music, a piece you've selected from a great tradition of change and politics and religion, Bob Marley.
Thank you.
Why do you like Bob Marley?
Why do I like Bob Marley? Well, it's his songs reflect our struggle, and his songs also reflect the days when we were still going to school and at uni. So,
lights are still in the eyes.
Oh yes.
On Sunday night, the music of Bob Marley. Bob Marley. A selection of our guest, Faye Tevi, General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches, on Sunday night around Australia. Faye, let's talk a little about the church in the Pacific. The 18th century, the church arrived along with the colonial masters for some period of time, but it became deeply entrenched. And there's a very strong tradition across the Pacific, particularly for a number of denominations. The Methodists, very strong in parts of the Pacific. There's a strong Catholic presence also. Mm-hmm. Some other later churches, like the Seventh-day Adventists, very mm-hmm. strong mm-hmm. across the Pacific. Mm-hmm. In some communities, these churches, particularly, say, if we take the situation in Fiji over in the recent past, the Methodist Church or elements of the Methodist Church became strongly associated with elements of the coup mm-hmm. Or of the number of coups in Fiji. Mm-hmm. How does a group like the Pacific Conference of Churches deal with those internal matters, that is, matters to do with the Pacific and good governance, in a sense, in the Pacific? Because they must be issues you have to dance around all the time.
Absolutely. We pray for them. That's one. Another way of dealing with it is that the churches and the Pacific Conference of Churches, we are really in the business of creating safe spaces for dialogue. And we will not be in any position to condemn certain moves or certain initiatives of our member churches. We might be discussing the rationale behind it, but we will not be in a position to question the initiatives and actions of our member churches. We can raise the issue of good governance. We can talk about it and create safe spaces for such dialogues to happen. And I think it's within the fellowship of the church leaders that these questions will come to the fore. We can create a conducive environment for such dialogue to happen.
Do those conservative groups, say the groups associated with Fiji and the Methodist groups who supported the early coup moves, do they remain inside the fold of the Conference of Churches, or have some of them stepped outside and said, no, we don't want any part of it?
No. They have remained within the fold of the church, the member church itself. But no, we haven't, to my knowledge, had a split as a result of the political change that has happened.
There are deep cultural issues as well as religious issues here. Let's keep with the issue of Fiji for the moment, because it's one that Australians are generally familiar with. The Fiji situation, particularly in its most recent with Bainimarama and others, there's an element there in which the churches have become identified with Fijian nationalism in one sense, so that the Indian population of Fiji stands on one side of the fence and the churches on the other side. Now, potentially there is a problem, because if the Pacific Council of Churches goes for the justice model, then one needs to recognise the place of the Indians. Right. Yet that's deeply offensive to many Christians who say, well, actually, we Fijians represent the Christian tradition, and what you're doing is providing a wedge for other religions to come in. These are very complex issues.
Yes, they are very complex. The issue of the multiracial church, that is the Methodist Church, that issue for them, they are still struggling with it. I think they have made headway in terms of bringing in the Indian community, or bringing in the Indian community to being Methodist or to being Christians in general. I think the way that we perceive the Methodist Church's participation, or the Methodist Church's call on the government to hold elections in 2009, we perceive it as perhaps a reminder and a call for the situation to move ahead, and a reminder to the government that, yes, this was said in past months and past days, and these are matters that the population of Fiji hold on to. These are, you know, newsworthy bits that our population holds on to, and for a government to dilly-dally on the dates and on the relevance of such a date in comparison to another, that creates, I guess, a sense of instability and a sense of concern from the population. Now, there is also in the Methodist Church, I must say that there is a sense of initiatives taking place. One is the great initiative that took place, that is taking place, between the president of the Methodist Church and the Archbishop of the Catholic Church in Fiji, where there is that call for dialogue. And also the other side of it, which is the statement made by Reverend Manasseh Lasaro in reminding the government about its commitments. And so you have those two strands coming through from the Methodist Church. I feel that, well, perhaps there is a strategy. Perhaps there is a strategy that the Methodist Church is adopting. And I think we need to have more discussions with the Methodist Church on that.
And I guess the key point out of this is that it's a demonstration of just how critical churches like the Methodist Church and the Catholic Church are, the leadership of those churches, to resolution of that situation.
Right.
They're still critical players.
Still very critical players in this process. And if there is a way forward, I think the churches will be the ones to show the way forward. Just to come back to the issue of Fijian nationalism and its attachment to the church, perhaps the way to perceive this is that the church is by default being perceived as a nationalist actor, merely because of the size of the congregation and the makeup of the congregation of the Methodist Church. And you have had coups in the past where the Methodist Church was for the coup, and then you've had another coup where the Methodist Church was against the coup. And that just goes to show you how perhaps maybe flexible, if we can say that, or how indecisive, if you want to put it that way, the church is with regards to these things. But we've got to maintain that open dialogue. We've got to create that space for dialogue to continue.
And in that situation, the role of somebody like yourself is really to be the person who keeps people talking to each other?
The role that I would play in this particular situation is to facilitate, is to play the good office, the role of the good officers, as in the UN, and provide good offices to these two factions, and to be at the disposal of the Methodist Church and the Catholic Church should they need a regional actor to facilitate this particular initiative.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia, and through Radio Australia across the Pacific and through the World Wide Web. You can podcast the program as well on abc.net.au/Sundaynights with an S. Our guest is Faye Tevi. Let's have another piece of music. You've just returned from the coronation of the new King of Tonga.
Yes.
Music of the Tongan Choir?
Yes. Lovely. Lovely lovely piece of music. They sang Handel's Messiah in Tongan at the processing out of the king. It's always moving to hear the Tongan choir sing Handel's Messiah in Tongan.
Oh,
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio, Music of Tonga. Whai Tevi, let's talk about Tonga. It's your home community.
Yes.
A new king of Tonga. There's always been a romantic attachment to the king of Tonga, back to when Queen Elizabeth was crowned as a young princess and became queen, and we had Queen Tiloti for many years in Tonga. So there's a strong attachment of both the Tongan people and almost a sense of ownership of Britishness associated with those two crowned heads.
Yes, it was a unique experience for many of us young ones who did not have the opportunity to see and witness for our own eyes Queen Salote in those days. We've only seen footage of her presence in London. So to experience a coronation such as the most recent coronation of King George Tupou V in Tonga, in the Pacific, was a unique opportunity to be there.
Yes. And it brings together the Tongan Christianity too, doesn't it? Because the church again has become part of, integrated into the traditional life of the community at a very deep level.
And it, I must say that it was an ecumenical event, because we had the Archbishop of the Diocese of Polynesia, Archbishop Bryce, consecrating him as king. We also had the head of the Methodist Church in Tonga giving the prayers and the Holy Communion, and also the Catholic Father, Father O'Rourke, being there and also saying the prayers.
It's become a problematic issue over the years in Tonga, the relationship of the royal family and the institution of the monarchy to democracy.
Yes.
Continuing discussions. Tensions flow back and forwards both ways.
Yes.
This becomes, again, a profound issue for the churches and where you stand in relation to this discussion.
Yeah.
For the people of Tonga, it's vitally important. Right. For some, to the extent that they adopt democracy, they lose attachment to the traditions which matter to them most.
Absolutely, absolutely. The the issue of democracy here, and since we're talking about the coronation, I think one of the big results of this coronation is that the Tongans, or the Tongan feeling of having a new king, and in turn the king accepting political and democratic reform, sort of leads the way and paves the way for a much more smoother transition into the 2010 political reforms that we will experience, in that there's a new composition of the parliament, there are new numbers of members from the people that can be elected, and also a transfer of powers from the king to the Prime Minister and the Cabinet.
Has that been absorbed by people in the local congregations, or do you still find, say, that you, as the General Secretary of a group like the Pacific Conference of Churches, can speak and adopt the language of democracy, yet you find in many congregations, still at the local level, grassroots level, great reservations and a strong emotional attachment to the old traditions?
No, I think there is a ground swell of sentiment of acceptance that this is the way that we need to move forward in. I think there is an acceptance by the nobility and also by the royal family that this is the path that is paved before us. This is the path that our king has agreed to. And this is the path that we will journey on. There is, of course, the understanding that perhaps, or what we would like to say, that, you know, perhaps Tonga is finding its own definition of democracy.
The key tension ultimately becomes between what was traditionally regarded as royal prerogative and the ownership of prerogative by the judiciary. That is, that
right.
Control of law passes into the judiciary and away from the court,
right.
From the sovereign's court to the courts of law. Now, that's a great challenge for any traditional community to face.
Right. And in terms of the perception, the perception in Tonga really is that if the king... I think it was just a matter because
there was no or very little information coming back from the royal family on these particular changes that left a certain taste of indecision and not really knowing how to move forward. And now that the king has come through and given the direction, I think that will be a healing. That will be a healing.
Yes, the seal decision. Has been placed on the on the.
Yeah, yeah. More. Yeah, like that. It's now the king has said, okay, we move in this direction, and that's the way we're going to go.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. John Cleary with you. We're talking with Faye Tevi, General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches, our guest on Sunday Night in Australia, to talk particularly about climate change and other issues affecting the nations of the Pacific. Another piece of music, Faye, you've got a wide variety of stuff you've brought and selected for us, some jazz, but particularly you've got an attachment to a little bit of acid jazz.
Yes, Jamie Rockway is a. I like their music. It's upbeat. It weaves in various flavors, and it's I think reflective of the personality that I have.
Yeah.
on Sunday night. A selection of our guest, Faye Tevey, General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches. Faye, you've given us some idea of the range of issues you have to confront in the position you're in. Let's talk a little bit about yourself. How do you come to be doing what you're doing? You've clearly got a strong attachment to the faith, but you also see yourself as somebody who has a commitment to civil society as well.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what shaped you.
I grew up in a very ecumenical family. My father was a canon of the Diocese of Polynesia, so was an Anglican canon. And my mother was a staunch is a staunch Methodist. And so we grew up in a house that was very ecumenical. I just happened to adopt the Anglican tradition. And so I'm an Anglican. I've been born and I am a proud Anglican. In the early years, my mother was the General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches from 1976 to 81. And so in those years, as you may recall, the church was very, very vocal on particular issues in the Pacific, namely the issue of nuclear testing, to the point that the General Secretary of the then Pacific Conference of Churches was granted a persona non grata status in Tahiti and New Caledonia and Wallis and Futuna. Or may I say, Te Ao Maohi, Kanaki and Wallis.
And worn as a badge of honor.
Worn as a badge of honor. It was at the time when we were really back up against the wall on these issues. And in those days, it was a very exciting time in the Pacific. You know, countries were becoming independent. And you had the number of church leaders that paved the way to independence of the Pacific Island countries is amazing. Walter Linney, Frederick Timakata. You talk about people in Fiji like the name Setareke Tulewoni, right? Amanaki Havea in Tonga. Not that Tonga was ever dependent on any other country, but you have people like Oscar Temaru, who at those days was really one of those young activists that was coming through. So I grew up in that environment.
So political and religious activism was linked?
Very much so. Yeah. And we had days when, you know, you'd had Walter Linney stopping by and talking about political issues with the then General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches. And so that kind of shaped my upbringing. And so with that particular grounding, despite all the countries that we went to and stayed in, I've always had this attachment to come back to the Pacific. And so I was trained in France, did my studies and came back and got married to a Tongan beautiful lady called Eleni, and now have four kids and happily settled back in Fiji.
Just as there are stresses and strains in Australian churches between conservative and liberal end, and sometimes people can be progressively political but conservative theological, other times they can be conservative theologically and politically conservative at the same time. Those stresses affect every church. But in cultures in the Pacific where the religion is such an important part,
right,
those stresses must be particularly strong.
Yes.
In your own family, if you've grown up as part of a family that has both Methodist and Anglican connections,
mm-hmm,
what is it that locks people in to a position that identifies the church and culture so strongly? What is it that has made those people who want to say, look, if we sacrifice, if we liberalise politically, we're actually sacrificing our Christianity or something of our faith? You must have encountered many of those people as you grew up, people who see that their Christianity is somehow linked to who they are as traditional people.
Mm-hmm. Well, even today, my mother, Mrs. Lorraine Tevey, was asked to relinquish her seat in the Standing Committee of the Methodist Church as a result of her commitment to the National Council for Building a Better Fiji. So you have that still happening. It's not as if, you know, we've stopped seeing that type of experience. I think it will come to pass that in time there will be an acknowledgement that
yes, this personal commitment to the church remains strong despite the institution of the church not acknowledging a person's contribution. We've had those experiences in the past. We'll continue to have them. And I think it's part and parcel of the church's journey.
You've got to live in two worlds in a way, haven't you? You've got to be able to speak to those people who still feel very strongly and viscerally the attachment of the church and national culture. Mm. But you've got to lead those people into a way of understanding that, well, in fact, there are global issues which we are all part of and cannot escape.
Yeah, and I think it's also part and parcel of the role of the Pacific Conference of Churches to be at the cutting edge of any issue and to lead the churches and to direct the churches in terms of the issues that we are addressing. Most of our churches, despite the fact that we have large congregations, the institution of the church may be not as well informed as the congregation of the church.
How are you? Right? How often are you dragged back from these big global issues and think, oh, I've got to go and face this local explanation again? Would they ever get it?
I think that's a good way of putting it. For me, it's the way I would describe it is that I need to maintain the tension between walking with the churches on these particular issues, walking not in front of them, not pushing them, but walking with them, but also keeping a cap on the global discussions and debates on these particular issues. We need to maintain that tension. And I think that's what keeps and that's what makes this particular position and particular job exciting, is that you cannot let go of the member churches, nor can you let go of the cutting edge issues. So on the one hand, I will be here talking to my Australian partners and talking to your politicians about the issues of concern to us. On the Saturday, the 23rd of August, I will be in a village talking about the issue of climate change. That's the tension that we've got to maintain. And if we lose one part of it, we've lost our mission.
Faye Tevi, thanks so much for joining us. Let's finish. We'll finish with a little joy from Carlos Santana.
Yes, Black Magic Woman.
Little Santana there, Black Magic Woman. Request of our guest, Faye Tevi. You're on Sunday night, back soon with the Inquisition.